Welcome to Messing About in Ships, episode number 6, January 10th, 2008. This week we have a whole bunch of listener comments, including our first audio comment. We have some news about an exciting new international high school program being launched. We have sea stories, including one about what it's like to get your ship inspected. And on Internet Ports of Call, we have some life hacks and some tall tales about tall ships. And finally, we finish up with some Podsafe music. Welcome to episode number 6 of Messing About in Ships. I'm Peter Mello, and my co-host and partner is Captain John Conrad. Hey, John, how's it going?
Really good, Peter. How you doing?
I'm doing okay. It's like summer up here today. It's 60 degrees, and for early mid-January, it's got to be a record. How's the weather down there?
The weather down here is nice. A lot of winds. We just had a storm front roll through, but otherwise, starting to calm down a little bit. So
good. Just some news about some stuff going on. We changed the photo on the blog header. We're using a different photo every month by Houston ship pilot Lou Vest, who said besides being a pilot is an incredibly talented photographer, and his work is posted on flickr.com under the name 118, and that's spelled out 118, all one word. And we'll have a link in the show notes to his work. But the picture there we're looking at is of the Hedda Knutsen, and it's one page of a calendar, the proceeds of which will benefit the Houston Ship Pilots Foundation. I think it's called the Anchor Watch. And there'll be more information. I think there already is information actually on the blog, but we'll post it in the show notes too with a change of the picture. But his work is pretty spectacular. You've profiled it, highlighted it in G Captain a number of times, haven't you?
Yeah, I highlighted it in G Captain and Pambo, the Marine Electronics blog, highlighted him as well. He had some really incredible stuff, and the calendar is a really good cause.
Yeah, it's great
and
stuff.
What's great about him is he's taking these photos while he's actually piloting ships. So it's not just photographers setting up poses, you know. This is someone who's actually working out at sea and taking the photos when he has time.
Yeah, it's great work. And he used to have the same camera I used to shoot with, a Nikon D200, and saw in one of his last series of photos that something happened to that camera, and he just got the new D300, which now I'm extremely envious. So look forward to seeing what he can do with that new machine.
Really quickly of note, though, he's got a couple sections, and a lot of people see his ship photos. But I just want to point people, he's got a, if you know how to use Flickr, he's got a subset of crew as well. And you click on that, and it's all really great pictures of crew members aboard these ships that he's piloting. And just from hauling lines to standing watch, he's even got one of a mate who's looks bored out of his mind, just standing watch, and some really great personal photos as well.
They are fantastic. And he has some non-marine ones. He's got some really incredible, I don't know if he was on a vacation or something, but he has some really incredible nature photography on there, and recently had some kids shots around Christmas too, so check it out. We got reviewed last week, or covered last week, in Lloyd's List. You want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, it's really exciting. Lloyd's List is a well-known and very well-established maritime media source. I believe they're owned by Fairplay now. Is that correct?
I'm not sure. I'm not sure about that. I do know that they're I think it's the oldest continuous publication in existence in the world, and I know it dates back to Edward Lloyd, who founded Lloyd's of London. So back into the 1700s, Lloyd's List was launched as basically a maritime and insurance report. It is definitely one of the premier maritime and insurance publications in the world, so it's pretty exciting to have are messing about in ships mentioned in there.
And was, you probably know more than I do, but wasn't Lloyd the one who started in a bar?
A coffee shop.
A coffee house?
Yeah,
coffee,
coffee
shop.
House. Yeah, coffee house. Yeah, so that was the beginning of it, and Edward Lloyd was the guy who started it, and Lloyd's List was dates back to that time, so pretty cool. And
I have the Wikipedia here. I can read it off real quick. Lloyd's
Great.
List is one of the oldest continuously running journals, having provided weekly shipping news in London as early as 1734. Now published daily, a recent issue was numbered 59,200. And known simply as The List, Lloyd's List was begun by Edward Lloyd, the proprietor of Lloyd's Coffee House in the City of London, as he was a reliable but terse source of information for the merchant agents and insurance underwriters who met regularly in his establishment in Lombard Street.
I actually worked in Lloyd's of London for several months back in 1986 when it was the height of the market. It was a very exciting place to be. It was great to be covered in that same issue. Actually, I think they also covered maritime accident casebook, didn't they?
Yes, they sure did. Bob Cootie's excellent podcast about maritime incidents. He really picks apart and deconstructs individual incidents. And they did a story on him the same day.
So if anybody's interested in the story, we'll have a link to it to the Lloyd's List website where they review the podcast. So that was really cool. This week we don't have our Mariner's Perspective. Captain Kelly Sweeney is MIA this week. Actually, I don't know if we told this story or previously, but every year Kelly makes a decision. He and his wife decided this a number of years back, and he wrote about this in Professional Mariner magazine. Every year at Christmas time, since they don't have children, he decides to relieve somebody on a ship somewhere in the world who has a young family. So we recorded those episodes with him, those little segments with him before he left for Christmas. And he went down to Panama to work on a dredge, and he should be back soon, I think, and we will get back underway with his Mariner Perspectives when he returns.
I'm looking forward to it. He's a really great resource.
We had some comments this week, some listener-reader comments, and the first one was a comment on the blog by Maripito, and I'll just read it. It says, "Please be good enough to spare us the inappropriate headbanging music as included in the episode 5. So I'll take full credit for that choice of music. One of the reasons I chose that music, it was actually, that song was originally a Led Zeppelin song in the classic album Houses of Holy, released in 1973. Where were you in 1973, John?
I wasn't around then.
Well, unfortunately, I was. But
born in 77.
Anyway, that song was called "The Ocean" by Led Zeppelin, and it was definitely a classic. And it was written by one of the few songs written by all four members of the band shared credit for writing that song. And basically, in the last line, Robert Plant talks about his 3-year-old daughter at that time who he wrote the song for. So anyway, we try to have kind of a marine related ocean shipping sea related song, and the ocean seemed appropriate. So if we offended anybody with this inappropriate head banging music, we'll try to make amends, and maybe John can pick the music in the future.
Well, I'm a big Led Zeppelin fan myself, so I don't know if I'd do any better.
Well, we also had a couple of contests or offers, and the first one that we'll talk about here is we were offering some invitations into Pounce, which is a relatively new social network. Well, it's a new social network, I should say, not relatively. That's been in beta for a while, and we're trying to create a marine community in there. And if anybody wants to join us, you can still email us, and we'd be happy to give you invitations. We will tell you, though, that we learned right after we made that offer that Pounce will be open to all comers, so you won't need an invitation to get in there later on this month, right? Is that right?
That's correct. I got that news from Dan Burka, who's the designer of Pounce, and he's a friend of mine, and he started it, and they want to open it up to everyone. finally. And it's a great way where we can share links and you guys can keep in touch with what we're doing. I post almost daily. You post daily, right?
I try to, you know, I go in my spurts. Yeah, I have been, but then the last few days I've been so busy I haven't been able to. But I'd like to go in there and just, I always learn something, you know, following a bunch of people that are kind of interesting and point me in the direction of something new, and it's fun. And you've always got good stuff in there. I mean, what you do in there seems to be different than what you do in other spaces, so it's kind of cool to see what you post in there. So I enjoy it.
Most of the people in there are bloggers, or a lot are traditional journalists, and it's kind of the backroom chatter, the scuttlebutt, if you will, of the blogging world. So you really get a good insight of what some of these people are thinking.
You can create groups in there, and that's what I've done. So everybody who comes in, I've created into a maritime group, so then I can distribute information. I can send a little note out or send a link to a website or send a YouTube video or music to people in the different groups. And I have a maritime group that John's in and some of the other people. And this week we had two people come in with messing about in ships invites, and one was Will Pound, who's didn't have a lot of information up there on his page other than saying he's located in the USA. And the second one is Captain Syed Sarfoglu, and I apologize for massacring his name, but he is from Melbourne, Australia, and on his page he said, "I started to be a mariner when I was 14 years old. It appears I will continue till the end of my life." And he's actually on Facebook too, so we've become connected via Facebook. So those two guys are in there, and they're on my maritime group, and I know John...
And I gave one invite. It was to Cadet Robert Hart of California Maritime Academy, and he's Division 6 Deck Squad Leader. And he shared one of Pounce's features is you can share photos and links, and he shared some of his own personal pics that he's taken while on the training ship. So maybe we'll include one of those photos in the show notes. Very talented cadet.
Cool. And I'd like to get him on my send me his info so I can get him in my maritime group. And then I guess finally we added we added up onto the blog a listener community map. And what it basically is a map that we want our listeners to plot themselves on, so we can see how wide the community stretches around the globe. We already know we got somebody in Australia listening, a regular listener, and we're very interested in knowing where you are and kind of seeing how we can fill this map out. It's pretty easy to do. It's in the left-hand sidebar. There are three icons across the top of the map. There's one with a little square and a big square. You click on that one, it makes the map go across the whole page, the whole web page. And you just grab a little pin. Actually, when you open it up, there's a little box there, and it's pretty self-explanatory. You put in your name, and you move your pin to where you're located, and you pin yourself on the map. So we'd love to have all of our listeners get on there. John and I are kind of lonely on there.
Sure, and I also encourage people to create a second pin. Go ahead and put your ship on there. If you're out to sea, create one from where you're from, and put another pin where your ship is. We'd love to see that.
Excellent idea. That's cool. Yeah, definitely. And finally, we got an audio comment this week from Brian Smith of Annapolis, Maryland, and he is a New York Maritime graduate, class of 86, your alma mater. John?
And he
also submitted a story to Discoverer. So we had a contest that if somebody submitted a story to Discoverer and an audio comment, they were going to get a T-shirt. And?
Yep, and my wife Cindy just wrote back, the T-shirts should be in the mail tomorrow.
Excellent. So we're going to play Brian's comment here, and John's going to come back and talk a little bit, respond a little bit to the comment.
Hi, I'm enjoying your new podcast, and I've got a suggestion for you. I think some that may be drawn to the podcast might not know how to become a professional mariner, so you might want to cover the different ways to become a professional mariner, from coming up through the hawse pipe to attending maritime college like I did, to attending a training program and getting a six-pack license. Well, thanks a lot. I enjoy the podcast, and looking forward to getting that t-shirt if I can.
Hello, Brian, and thank you for your comment. We went over much of this topic in Episode 3, an episode we recorded with Captain Bob Glover of Northeastern Maritime Institute up in Fairhaven, Massachusetts. I encourage all young kids who are looking at a career at sea to go back and listen to Episode 3. There are a lot of great tips there. Let me put a new spin on it. I think the most important thing for someone looking to start a maritime career, whether it's right out of high school or a career change later in life, is to identify your goals. I realize this is a difficult thing to do on the onset, but it's really important. Some of the reasons people go out to sea are for the camaraderie, a close-knit group of coworkers that you live with on a daily basis. Others go out for the solitude of sea. Still others go out because they really enjoy traveling and trying new and interesting things. But it's important to identify this early on, or at least get an idea of what in the future will make you happy. There are a lot of negatives about going out to sea that you also have to realize. It's a difficult career for a family. You're going to be spending many long days at sea, and you're going to be away from them. Also, at this point, communications is difficult. Something that's improving and shouldn't deter someone just starting out on their career. There are also many long nights at sea, which many people can find boring. And a lot of the work is hard, especially in inclement climates and working ships. That being said, there are a lot of rewards to this life. The job is interesting, exciting. You get to meet new people, and you have an opportunity to travel the world, which is one of the main reasons I got into the industry. So after identifying your goals, the next thing is to find out a little bit more about the industry and get some advice. The most common way people head out to sea is by joining the Navy. There are good aspects to this decision, and there are negatives as well. But it should be pretty clear from the onset if you want to pursue a commercial shipping or want to go the military route. If you decide the commercial side of shipping, which is more about what this podcast talks about, it's important to take these goals that you've identified and find someone who can help you pursue them. A great place is G Captain's Forum, where you can talk this over, but it's good to get personal advice from mariners. If you're just graduating high school, a great way to get advice is to call up one of the maritime academies and go for a campus visit. Now, the academy route gives you a few unique options. You get your four-year degree, and during those 4 years, you spend roughly a month each summer at sea, traveling to great places like Europe, the Caribbean, islands in the Atlantic. And these trips give you a taste of what the life of a sailor will be. At the end of 4 years, you get a bachelor's degree, and you get a maritime license, allowing you to start off at the ranks of an officer. At this point, since you have a college degree and a license, you have two career paths. You can go directly into an office job. You could go directly into an officer's job on a ship. You also have the option to spend a few years as an officer and then pursue a landside job, or get an advanced degree. If you are not interested in college, or you're looking, really need to make money right out of high school, or if you're doing a career change and can't take the time off to go back to school, the other option is becoming a hawse piper. Now, because the Coast Guard license officers and has endorsements required at the AB level, you're going to have to start out your career as an ordinary seaman. Seaman does things like chip paint, swab decks, and help the deck crew. After accumulating sea time, you can advance to an AB seaman. They do things like stand a lookout watch on the bridge. They're the ones who actually steer the vessels. And they do a lot of the more advanced jobs, a lot of the more traditional maritime jobs, like handling rope and doing the seamanship type things. As you advance through AB, you could become a bosun, which is a deck supervisor. And after you have accumulated, I believe it's approximately 3 years of sea time, you could go back to a shorter set of schools. Instead of doing a four-year degree, you go back and take 16 weeks worth of classes. And then you go and sit for your Coast Guard license. If you started out on large ships, you can sit for your third mate's license. If you start out on smaller ships, you have an opportunity to also sit for a license or start out as a captain of a boat. Another advantage of the hawsepipe route is that you can try out the life at sea while you're making some money. And it doesn't preclude you from the ability to go back to school. In fact, you could spend a year as an ordinary seaman, make some money, and then if you think that this is really something you want to pursue, head back to the maritime school, and you're going to be a step ahead. We welcome comments from people who are starting their careers, and feel free to contact us, podcasts@messingaboutinships.com, and we could try to answer any specific questions you may have if you're looking into this career route.
Now, I wanted to update you on a little bit of news. Actually, it's a little personal news here. This week, I joined Northeast Maritime Institute, which is a maritime training school. We had Captain Bob Glover on in episode number 3, I think it was, 3 or 4, and he is the director of education over there. He did a great job of talking about what goes on at the school. I'm real excited because I was hired to lead up this new groundbreaking international high school program. So we're basically creating these maritime education and training and employment programs for at-risk and underserved kids. And the first program we got underway right now is in Bermuda. And we have 24 kids identified that have sailed on the Spirit of Bermuda. And they will go through this program with us over the next year, where they will actually do some stuff down there, some academic stuff down there. They'll they will go through basic safety training and fire, and they will do a voyage from Bermuda to Fairhaven, Massachusetts, where our school is, the institute is, and they will then be with us for 5 or 6 weeks there, taking more advanced maritime courses. At the end of this whole thing, they'll have a certificate of competency, a merchant mariner document, and a high school degree and or equivalency, depending on how old they are. And we will probably the kicker in this whole thing is we are basically going to guarantee them some kind of opportunities in the maritime field, employment opportunities. So it's an exciting program. We're working on Bermuda, as I said first. We're looking at a local program here to train some kids here in Massachusetts, and then we got some really exciting programs potentially on the drawing board in far field or around the world. So it's really kind of an exciting opportunity that I'm looking forward to being a part of.
Yeah, that's some really interesting news. And so, where's the training going to take place? Do you have facilities in Bermuda, or is it going to be actually on board of ships, or?
The plan is we will ultimately have a facility in Bermuda. We will open up a Northeast Maritime Institute in Bermuda, and we're working on that currently. So looking at some really unique space and hope to be able to nail that down shortly. But in the interim, we'll be doing some training in some alternative educational facilities in Bermuda. And then the trip itself is going to be part of the training regimen, and it will, you know, it's experiential learning. On the trip up, they'll once they arrive here in Massachusetts, then they will be at the school where they'll use the simulators and the classrooms and all the other resources we have at the Institute to provide them with the training that they need, and then they will fly home, and we're actually breaking this up into two different groups. So it's a peer leadership model we're utilizing as well. So the first group that graduates actually become mentors and peer leaders to the next group that comes along, and so on. So, you know, as I say, sometimes the best way of learning about something is teaching somebody else, and that's basically integrated into this peer leadership model. So we hopefully, in the near future, we'll have a facility in Bermuda, and I think there's a plan to have a simulator down there and to do not only high school stuff but also to do continuing education for adult mariners in Bermuda that may not have the formal education, maritime training. So that's the plan.
That's real exciting, and it seems like a good opportunity to me for part of my comment that the listeners just heard was how people going into the maritime industry really need to find a mentor and someone who can help them with their goals. And teaming up with a training institute that has mariners coming in and out every day, that could really show these kids some what's out there, their options.
Absolutely. I think it works both ways, too. I think it's probably pretty inspiring to have some of those adults to be associating with these young people who are going to be going through a pretty rigorous program and going to be being transformed from, basically kids into young adults. So we're excited about it all the way around. I'm personally really excited about it. And, I'll keep you posted here and through my blog.
Yes, please do. We're really interested.
Well, let's jump on to our sea stories this week. And you want to go first, John?
So I just wanted to talk a little bit about this my trip right now. I work offshore in the Gulf of Mexico on a large ship. It's over 800 feet long, and it's an exploratory drill ship looking for oil. And this week we have our big yearly inspection by the DNV. They are a classification society based out of Norway. They come out every year and they perform the safety and equipment inspection on board ship. So how ship inspections really work, you start with weekly inspections, and these are things that have to be checked every single week, lifeboats, fire gear, life jackets, the real critical equipment. Then we have our monthly inspections, and monthly inspections are also done by the crew, and these are things like fire extinguishers, fire stations, life rafts, and so forth. And then, we go into quarterly, which is also done by the crew. But yearly, a third party comes out and does a complete inspection, very rigorous inspection, going through everything. All of our safety-related equipment. It's a real important inspection. It really shows, how much preparation you've done, you've put into keeping the crew safe. And it's an inspection that officers really care a lot about. They come on board. They come out on a helicopter, on my vessel. They usually team up with the captain, first of all, and go through all the paperwork. So they're going through all of our certificates that are issued about the ship, like minimum safe manning certificate, which states exactly how many people we need in each position, how many officers, how many crew members. They go through all our safety certificates, lifeboat, weight tests, fall tests. The book is actually quite enormous. Our certificate book alone is it's about the biggest binder size you can possibly buy. And we have one primary and two secondary. So it's quite thorough just looking through the documents. And then they go and they check all our license and our Siemens papers, our Z-cards, and check that we're actually qualified to be out here in the position we're serving in. And after that's completed, they the chief mate, myself, takes them around, and they go through everything, every lifeboat, looking through all the equipment from the emergency water to the fishing gear that's required. They check the flashlights and emergency batteries, and not only the equipment for abandoning the ship, but also the firefighting equipment. And then the that's the first and second day. The third and fourth day, they go around with the engineering side, and they check all of the engineering equipment, the smoke detectors, any overpressurization, pop-off valves, the emergency diesel generator, and all of that equipment. And it's a really thorough inspection. Once that is complete, next week we have the Coast Guard coming out. So how it kind of works is, because we're in U.S. waters, the Coast Guard is considered the port state. We do not fly a U.S. flag. We fly a foreign flag. But because we are in U.S. Waters, the Coast Guard comes out and does a basic inspection. It's a lot less thorough, but it is still really important. And the main difference with that one is you have to do a complete fire drill with them. We sound the alarms and simulate a fire somewhere, just like we do every week. They observe the whole operation. What they're really looking for is the DMV's looking for everything. They go from the smallest item to the really large things. And note all the deficiencies. And the Coast Guard is looking more that you have a good grasp of safety issues aboard your ship. And it's one of those inspections. They start with something small, and if everything's looking good, they continue on around the ship. If they find something that's out of place, then they're really going to start digging in and turn it into a longer inspection. I'm real happy to report we have excellent mates and ABs. A lot of the ABs do safety inspections for my ship. I tell you, Peter, they're really making my job easy. They saw it this week because the guys really had everything lined up. Doing an amazing job out here. So it's a team effort. It really makes the crew feel good and makes you feel good as a chief mate to have such a great bunch of guys going around and checking the stuff every month. There's a lot of stuff to inspect, keep up on.
What? How many DNV personnel come out for one of these?
Only ones required to come out. There's a real shortage in the industry, and that's one of the things I think is great about this maritime high school program that you're working on, is that we really need qualified people out here, not only aboard ship, but in all aspects of the industry, including the surveyors. And the DNV, their last inspector, was a really great guy. He left to, young guy, really motivated. He left to go back to law school in New York, and they're in a bit of a shortage, so they put a really experienced, one of the managers came out, who had been an auditor for years, and he brought a trainee, and I think that's pretty much what they're doing nowadays, is an experienced guy with a trainee, so makes the inspection go a little smoother and gives that junior guy an opportunity to learn.
How about when the Coast Guard comes out?
The Coast Guard comes out with, they take their own helicopter out and come out with a whole group of guys. There's usually one or two primary inspectors and then the aircraft crew, obviously. Yeah, that's the answer to that.
Well, my prior career was for 20 years. I was in New York City and London and insured ships. And I can tell you, I did for quite a while. Did some blue water stuff, and DNV was one of the classification societies that is highly regarded, and you would never really insure a vessel that didn't pass muster by DNV or one of the other classification societies. So,
can you tell our listeners a little bit about what a classification society is? What purpose they serve? Their history?
Yeah, well, you basically kind of laid it out, and there are different certification organizations, I guess you'd call them, classification, which is basically what a classification society is. And DNV is the Norwegian, it's Det Norsk Veritas, and ABS is a U.S. Body that does similar, and Lloyd's Register, again. So they basically, from an insurance perspective, they give an underwriter confidence and that the risk is as it is represented to them as an underwriter when they're assessing the risk on it. And this dates way back to the time we talked earlier about Lloyd's of London and Lloyd's coffee shop back in the 1700s. You got to keep in mind people were insuring these ships, and they really marine insurance in particular, was based on this concept of good faith, because underwriters oftentimes would never see the risks, whether it was ships or cargoes that they were actually insuring. And as a result, over time, what developed is a whole network of inspectors, people like Det Norsk Veritas and other organizations that would kind of help the underwriters gain confidence and better understanding of the risks involved. And additionally, there would be a network of claim settling agents around the world that could jump in if one of these Lloyd's risks experienced a casualty. So I don't know if that answered your question exactly, but that's kind of the background, at least from the insurance perspective.
And I have a little quote again from DNV's website. It says that Norsk Veritas is a independent foundation with the objective of safeguarding life, property, and the environment. Our history goes back to 1864 when the foundation was established in Norway to inspect and evaluate the technical condition of Norwegian merchant vessels. Since then, our core competence has been to identify, assess, and advise on how to manage risk. Whether we classify a ship, certify an automotive company's management system, or advise on how best to maintain an aging oil platform, our focus is to safety and responsibility, improve business performance. So it looks like they're branching out into other realms. Some of the
you've hit the nail on the head.
Work.
Yeah, a lot of these registers or classification societies, Lloyd's Register, Bureau Veritas, which is a French one, American Bureau of Shipping, and Germanischer Lloyd, the German one. They go off into they've come even ashore with ISO and other. They've taken their experience from the shipping world, from the maritime world, and this happened a number of years ago, and have brought it ashore to help organizations, manufacturers, look at processes and so on. So they started out dating back, and I'm actually on Wikipedia now, and I think it starts right here talking about classification society. The second half of the 18th century, merchants, marine underwriters, and others, all connected with shipping, often gathered at Lloyd's Coffee Shop in London. In 1760, customers of that coffee house formed the Register Society, the first authentic classification society, which would subsequently become Lloyd's Register. Their purpose was to develop a system for the independent inspection of the hull and equipment of ships presented to them to be insured. So that's kind of it in a nutshell. So it sounds like things are going well for you out there, and we're happy for you, and hopefully your time with the Coast Guard will be just as enjoyable.
Yeah, it's like anything else, I guess. If you do your daily job up to a high standard, you don't have to worry so much when audit time comes. So
yeah,
we're very lucky to have such a good crew who does that.
Great. Well, my story this week is a Discoverer news story. It was submitted by Tim, and it is the story was the Tall Ships Festival brings in $27.5 million for province. And basically, it's a story about last summer's Tall Ships Festival in Nova Scotia I have some knowledge about, since that was what I did for the last 6 years, is run the Tall Ships organization, the American Sail Training Association, which is the North American Tall Ships organization. And it was just great to see this article. These festivals are amazing things. They bring hundreds and hundreds of thousands of people down to the waterfront, and as a result of that, they generate some really significant economic impact for host communities. When I was at the American Sail Training Association, we launched the Tall Ships Challenge, which is actually the event that's referred to in this article, although not directly, but that this is the event we brought to Nova Scotia, or the American Sail Training Association brought to Nova Scotia last summer. And while I was there, we launched in 2001 through 2006. I believe we visited somewhere in the range of close to 40 cities, 36 cities over that time period in North America. And we brought millions of people down to the waterfront and generated a cumulative economic impact over that time period of over $400 million. So it's a pretty significant endeavor for a small nonprofit that's located in Newport, Rhode Island. And just as important as the economic impact, these events really allow communities to brand themselves. And what I mean by that is a city like Halifax, Nova Scotia, is really kind of known as a maritime community and as Canada's tall ships community. Likewise, in the United States, Newport, Rhode Island, cities like Norfolk, Virginia, which was the American Sail Training Association's Port of the Year this year, Baltimore. These are all cities that have done a really good job of developing their waterfront and bringing in tall ships. When they do that, people show up, and those people spend a lot of money. So it's pretty significant. I can tell you, I was just chatting earlier tonight with my wife, who does economic impact studies, and I know for the NCAA Final Four, I think something like that generates $50 million of economic impact. So for a small, relatively small city like Halifax and the outlying communities that hosted Tall Ships to generate $27.5 million over 10 days is pretty significant. And it's also, reason they do it is it celebrates countries, both of North American countries, U.S. and Canada's rich maritime heritage, and it's a fantastic family event. So anyway, next time Tall Ships come into town, go check it out.
Seems like a real win-win scenario for everyone.
Yeah,
put in the hard work and support of the local government and organization.
Yeah, it's definitely a family family friendly event, and one that really celebrates our history. So anyway, I'm proud to have been a part of it, and I'm glad to see that things are still cooking along. So,
I'm looking forward to your, I'm looking forward to my first tall ship, ride, in the future, hopefully,
yeah. Great.
So I can pull some weight with my co-host here, and,
we'll work on that.
One of my hopes.
Actually, I think, as a part of the high school program, that we're doing down in Bermuda, I'm heading down there at the end of the month to go for 2 days on the Spirit of Bermuda, which is a brand new ship that they built up in Maine, and they're using it for Bermuda Sloop Foundation, it's called, and we'll have a link to it in the show notes, but it's a spectacular, unique rig and a spectacular vessel, and doing unbelievable great work with youth down in Bermuda, and we're looking forward to taking it up a notch and working with them on this program. So anyway, our internet ports a call this week. John, what do you got?
Yeah, I want to, it's not a specific site, but I want to talk about a little bit about life hacks and some of the exciting things, tips that you can find on the internet. My favorite site is one called lifehacker.com. And there are a number of sites just like this, But what they basically do is give you tips to make your life easier. And as a sailor, that's something we can really use on a day-to-day basis. Another great one is 43folders.com, run by Merlin Mann up in San Francisco. All these sites really have one thing in mind. They give you tips and tricks on just how to navigate your everyday life. And I've taken a few of these and put them on the GCaptain blog. The last story I did was Air Travel with Your Knife, a how-to. And this is just talking about how you can send packages to your post offices, hotels, and American Express offices overseas, so they're waiting for you when you get to the ship. It's a real problem, luggage delays lately. You have a lot of, you're basically moving into a ship for a number of months. Most mariners do between a 3 and 6 month hitch. So you got a lot of equipment to bring, and a lot of it is real important. That was one tip on how you can mail this stuff to your destination so it arrives there. The other one we did is a Google map that allows you to look up what's open in your area. So this is just a Google map mashup, they call it. And what a mashup is taking various resources around the web and putting it on one page. GCaptain has a maritime blog mashup, for instance, that takes the latest 5 stories from all the maritime blogs. We also have a maritime job mashup that takes the latest 5 jobs from all the big maritime job sites. That's actually a really popular feature. What this particular one did is it took store information, local store information, and it puts it on a Google map, but it also has a search capability that says you can put in what you're looking for. So where it's really of use is a mariner gets into a port really late night and has a long watch, maybe the 8 to 12 watch. He gets off watch, and he has to run out and get toothpaste, or maybe there's a really good CD he wanted to buy. How do you know what's open, especially if it's a foreign port and you're not sure what's going on? On the site, you put in your location, say the port of Los Angeles, and then you put in what you're looking for. So you just put coffee. Click on it, and it puts a pin on each coffee shop that is open at the time. And you can adjust the time that you want and the days of the week. It's just something that makes your life easier. But I'm going to put a few of these resources on the show notes. But they're all basic life hacks. And you can just go to Google and type in life hacks and get these sites. And they're really limitless capability. I went to buy a yearly planner at Staples the other day, and they were rather expensive. I went to one of these life hack sites, 43 folders. They sent me to DIYplanner.com, and this is a place where you can print out the yearly planner. But not only that, you can put in your schedule when you're getting on the ship, when you're getting off the ship, and put a dress book. It all links up to your contacts and Outlook. I don't have a specific site this week, but it's just a series of sites that can really make your job easier.
I use NetVibes as my homepage, and it's if you're familiar with NetVibes, you're able to design your own homepage with these just different widgets or modules. And actually, the top left corner of my NetVibes page is a Life Hacker. So I got the 10 last posts of Life Hacker, and always find it really useful and really interesting. And one of the things I learned from Life Hacker is they often have this giveaway of the day, which is oftentimes really good software. And that you normally have to pay for. And last week, for instance, I got some video software that I downloaded that normally would cost nearly $500. And for 24 hours, it was free. So that came via Lifehacker. So we like Lifehacker.
Oh, what software was that?
You're going to ask me that, huh? Let me see.
Okay, we'll put it in the show.
I can tell you in half a second here. It was Starburn. It's a CD, it's CD, DVD, HD, it's HD, it'll make, CDs, DVDs, and HD DVDs, What happens with giveaway of the day is, we're kind of going long on this, but that's, I think it might be useful to people or interesting to people. Giveaway of the day, they send you an email every day and they tell you what the giveaway is, and you go to the website. And on the website, people are voting on whether that giveaway is worthwhile or not. So a lot of times it'll be screensavers and things that don't really interest me, but surprisingly, screensavers seems to interest a lot of people, but don't interest me. But a lot of times it'll be things like video editing software or other types of, they have this piece of software that I use now all the time, and I think it's called Evernote, to take notes. So anyway, people will say thumbs up or thumbs down, and you can kind of get a feel for whether this is worthwhile to download or not. But generally, when something has a high, like, this stuff is usually anywhere from 20 to 30 bucks, 50 bucks. When you see something that has a value of close to 500 bucks, it seems like the inclination maybe is people think it's good. But I think on that piece of software, 70% of the people said it was worth downloading. So for free, it was worth taking the time to download it. So anyway, Life Hacker is great.
For Mac guys, Mac Heist is the same site over there. So if you're looking for free software, the same Mac Heist is the one. And
great.
If you look really carefully through Life Hacker, you'll find a few G-Captain stories as well. So maybe I'll offer that a T-shirt this week, the first commenter who finds the G-Captain mention in Life Hacker. There's more than one, but the first person will get a T-shirt.
Very cool. You are so generous. My internet protocol is called the Tabor Boy Project, and it's basically it's a website I created, and I'm trying to keep on this theme this week about maritime education, youth education, experiential education. And the Tabor Boy Project is a website I created. It's a living history and quasi-social network that focuses on the life of a schooner called Tabor Boy that is owned by Tabor Academy. And it's a school I went to as a high school student, and sailed on the ship from the age of 13 to 17, sailed to Bermuda 4 times, was in the tall ships race, just basically formed my life and thousands of other young people who went to the school who sailed aboard. And it is also definitely positively influenced their lives. So I created this website about a year ago, and it is on a platform called Ning, so it's a social network, and it's open to the public, and you can go there and you can see the stories that people have told. You can see photos of from over the years. We have contributors from the class, high school graduating class of 1956, all the way to current students who are sailing on board the ship. I think we have now 85 members, it's my website of the week. Take a look at it. It's a great platform if you have anything similar that you want to kind of get people together on, create your own social network. Ning is real powerful. It's easy to use, and it's a lot of fun, and it's a great way to bring people together. So, again, it's Tabor Boy Project, and the URL is www.taborboy.org, and that's taborboy.org. And you can learn a lot about the ship there, and you can learn about the good work that it did in changing young people's lives, and still does. So that's my website.
And I'm looking at it right now, and I really love maritime photos, and I can see this whole section where your members can upload photos, and they can write their own blog posts. Is that correct?
Yeah, if you're a member on the site, and what we basically said on the site is if you've ever been connected to Tabor Boy, you could join. So if you ever sailed as a trainee, if you were a parent of a trainee, if you ever went aboard for a day sail or visited the vessel in any way, if it ever touched your life, you should join and tell stories or submit pictures. And that's basically we're trying to collect the history of this vessel that was built in 1914, I believe. She's been sailing. A couple of years ago, we had a celebration at the school. It was a 50-90 celebration. So the vessel had actually turned 90 years old, and she had been sailing at the school for 50 years, taking kids out for education, character building, and so on. And right now, as we speak, actually, she's in the Caribbean. The students aboard her, they have a Caribbean studies program, so they go out to do some very, very serious marine biological oceanographic research on the vessel. So kids from Tabor fly down there. They spend some time down there on the schooner doing this research and come home. So anyway, there's all kinds of interesting photos over the years she's been sailing there, and some stories, all kinds of different stories. And you see actually some old pictures of me, and my mother had a knack of clipping newspaper articles, so I think we got a few posted up there as well. Some things that never would have. The cool part of this thing is the things that would never seen the light of day before. You know, people have turning up with articles and photos that have been sitting in shoeboxes for years. So now we're able to collect the history of this vessel in ways that we were never able to do a couple of years ago. The internet's a pretty powerful tool to do that. So anyway,
great software, and I'll let our listeners in on a little insight. G Captain's working with Pringo Networks to kind of develop something similar, and the first step on that road is we want you to write articles for G-Captain. So you go to gcaptain.com's homepage and you click on the Did You Know icon right there. And we're looking for people to write articles. And it doesn't matter whether you're a captain, cook, or a cadet. We want the stories, and we really want to try to post them on the blog at one in our view to the real international community in all levels. So.
Excellent. Well, that kind of brings us to a close this week, I think. Did you have anything else you wanted to talk about?
No, I think that's about it. That rounds it up.
Good. Well, people, we still encourage comments on our blogs. You can certainly leave comments on the show blog, which is messingaboutinships.com. You can send us an email at podcast@messingaboutinships.com, and that's what happened this week with our listener Brian Smith, who sent that comment in. You can do it via each of our blogs. So John is gcaptain.com. He over there, he has a great blog. He has a Discover News site, the forums, the Mariner web tools, and now it seems like you can tell your own stories over there too. This is a one-stop shop for all your maritime needs. You can leave a comment on my blog, which is seafever.org, and that's seafever.org. We have Skype set up. Our Skype ID is MAISPODCAST. So that's MAIS podcast. And finally, we have a telephone number you could leave an audio comment on. We will check that before the next show, and that number is 206-973-7000. That's 206-973-7000. So it's no excuses. There's all kinds of ways to participate and be part of this show, and we hope that you will do that. So anyway, any final words of wisdom from the high seas?
No. Just wanted to quickly thank our guests again, and all those who submitted comments. And also, since we mentioned his Discover News story, my brother Tim is the co-founder of Unofficial Networks. They're really getting a lot of snow in Tahoe this year. He runs the site Unofficial Squaw. So if you like skiing, be sure to check it out.
Great. Well, I look forward to talking to you next week, and hopefully maybe we'll have Captain Kelly Sweeney back with us, too.
Yeah, I look forward to it.
This week's PodSafe music is from Laura Harley, and the song is To the Sea. It's from the PodSafe Music Network, so enjoy.
I hear your voice. searching. I won't rest till I'm with you. I'll go across the fields and through the trees, across the sand to the sea. Now come to me, and I will wade out past the waves now, blue, gray, and green, all around me, just like the sea. You're calling to me, you're never ending, your words the sea, rushing over me.
You're never ending, your words the sea.